Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, aptly enough named Michael Cutler. That's me. I thank you so much for joining me. I hope you've all had a good weekend. I hope you're all looking forward to the upcoming holidays, whether it's Passover or Easter this weekend. It's just wonderful to be able to join you and share with you some of the thoughts and concerns that I have had for quite some time where so many issues are concerned, but especially where it involves immigration and border security. Those of you who are familiar with me, who are perhaps hopefully familiar with my program, know that I'm a retired INS senior special agent and spent 30 years working for that agency and acquiring a front row seat, firsthand knowledge as to just how important those challenges involving immigration and border security are. If you're not familiar with me, want to learn a little bit more about who I am and why I'm out here doing what I do, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, that's how you spell my last name. It's M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R.net. Or you can go to another wonderful website, a website that is run by an organization known as Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. And certainly I think that this is a wonderful website because while they say they're from California, the issue in reality affects all of America and all Americans. So they were leading the charge because California, as we all know, has gotten particularly hammered by the immigration crisis. But let's face it, folks, it's not just California that's getting hammered. It's the whole country. And I want to make a point that really needs to be made as often as possible. We keep on hearing about the four border states, you know, California, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas. In point of fact, every one of our 50 states is a border state, because any state that has a seaport or an international airport obviously provides an entry point into our country for folks from around the world. And the immigration crisis is not just about Mexicans or Latin America. It's about foreign nationals from across this planet who would come here, violate our laws, and create a problem for us. And it's important to remember that the reason that we have immigration laws in the first place is to accomplish two primary, very important objectives. Number one, save American lives. Prevent bad guys from coming here, whether they're terrorists or criminals. And two, protect American jobs. The immigration laws, as you may or may not know, prior to the Second World War, was the responsibility, was the bailiwick, if you will, of the Labor Department. Because, you see, it's not simply that America was built by immigrants, and we hear that all the time, and certainly America was built by immigrants. My mother, may she rest in peace, was an immigrant. My dad's family were immigrants. But simply having lots of people pour across a nation's border is not the prescription for success, but very often a prescription for disaster. So what made America America was the idea that if you came here and worked hard and were willing to acquire an education, willing to acquire a skill or a trade, you could improve your economic standing, you could aspire to write the next great American success story. And that, in fact, is how America became America, because this country was built by the middle class and by the potential for so many Americans to become a part of the middle class, a middle class that right now is under attack. It's under attack by both political parties. It's under attack by corporations that want to bring in cheap labor, whether we're talking about labor to do the difficult manual jobs, the illegal aliens who are terribly exploited, or whether we're talking about the high-tech visas, whether it's H-1B, and now I see that they're going after the L-1s, the intra-company transferees, and all these other ways of acquiring the authority to lawfully work in the United States is putting increasing pressure on American workers. You know, we have to think about labor as a commodity the way that petroleum is a commodity. The way that diamonds, for example, is a commodity. And for those of you who know anything about the diamond market, the De Beers Company of Amsterdam, they do the diamond mining and they market the diamonds. They are very careful as to how many gem quality diamonds are released in any given year onto the market, because they understand that if you can control supply, then you could control price. If every gem quality diamond were polished and put out on the market for jewelry, the price of diamonds would drop through the floor. The reason, one of the reasons that diamonds are so costly and so valued is because the supply has been tightly controlled by the diamond miners. The companies that are involved in the diamond trade understand how important it is to be very careful that they don't dump diamonds onto the market and drive down the price. Well, what corporations have always wanted to do is to drive down wages. That's the age-old battle between the working folks and the corporate executives. How do we get labor for the least amount of money possible? And by looking overseas, whether it's to India for the high-tech workers or Mexico for the folks that do the manual labor, I'm just using those two countries, but believe me, it involves almost every country on the planet at this point. What they're able to do is flood the market with cheap labor. Cheap labor. So what we are now doing is making it increasingly impossible for America's working poor to sustain themselves, and we're making it increasingly difficult for American kids to go to college, get that good education, pay off student loans that very often look more like a mortgage payment than a student loan payment, and then get jobs that make that investment of time and money and talent worthwhile. Because right now, what we are finding is increasing numbers of foreign students coming to America, either to continue their studies or upon graduation, staying here and taking the jobs or outsourcing the jobs overseas. The point is, keep pressure on the labor market by dumping as many workers into that market as possible to suppress the wages. And what is so incredible is that no candidate has ever talked about the need not to create jobs, but to liberate jobs. And if you wonder how you liberate a job, it's very easy. See, to create jobs, folks, requires that you may build a building and hire people. It takes time. It takes money. It doesn't happen overnight to create jobs. But the way you can liberate jobs is if our government was willing to enforce the immigration laws. Because if we had an adequate number of ICE agents, and ICE, for those of you not familiar with the alphabet soup of government agencies, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is supposed to enforce the immigration laws from within the interior of the United States. And the way they're supposed to do this is to go after not only the employers, which seems to be all that the Obama administration is willing to do, on a very small scale, by the way, we only have 7,000 ICE agents for the whole country. To put that number in perspective, the New York City Police Department, just to protect New York City, has about 35 or 36,000 police officers, down, I might add, from 40,000 just a few years ago. TSA, the Transportation Safety Administration, employs more than 60,000 people, and you know the trouble they've been getting into, groping 85-year-old women and 15-month-old kids, but they have 60,000. ICE has 7,000, and more than half of them are doing customs work, which has nothing to do with immigration work. So when you look at it from that perspective, madness is the result. So we now have the administration talking, and we're going to get into this in a little bit, about providing a waiver for unlawful presence, for aliens who are here illegally. We're going to waive it. We're going to make believe the law doesn't exist. You know, it's remarkable. The founding fathers, in their brilliance, with their insight, with their perspective, with their imagination and creativity, came up with a wonderful form of government that could be summed up by the expression of checks and balances. The executive branch executes or enforces the laws or administers the laws. The legislative branch makes the laws. And, of course, the Supreme Court is there to determine the constitutionality of the laws. So there was this idea of checks and balance. No one branch of these three branches of our government to become too powerful. Well, over time, the executive branch, coveting power ever more dearly, has come up with a strategy of ignoring the laws. You know, my original design, my original intentions way back in college was to get involved with engineering. In fact, my oldest son is an engineer, and I'm very proud of him. But what I love about nature's laws is that they are immutable. Congress doesn't get to decide whether or not the speed of light is too fast or too slow. Certainly, if they don't like the speed limits on our nation's highways, the politicians can tamper with that. If you remember, Jimmy Carter, with the oil shortage, declared a national speed limit of 55 miles per hour. If we drove slower, we'd burn less gas. And some states said, you know what, keep your highway funding. We'll keep our speed limits. But the point is, the law of man can be changed by the stroke of a pen. The laws of nature are immutable. Wouldn't it be nice if the laws of nature and the laws of man worked the same way, that they were immutable? But they're not. So we now have an administration, more than I believe any other administration, and I may be wrong on this, and if you think I am, let me know. You can reach me. But they really seem hell-bent on circumventing this process of checks and balances that has served this nation so well for roughly a quarter of a millennium. It's startling and very disconcerting, but it's waiver after waiver, whether it's the visa waiver program that permits aliens into our country who maybe shouldn't be let in. You know, Richard Reed was the shoe bomber. Isn't it remarkable that Richard Reed was able to get on board an airplane without first getting a visa, and then almost brought down an airplane? Because of him, when you travel by plane, your shoes have to come off. I have a couple of sets of loafers that I wear when I fly because I do travel frequently. But the fact that a British national could get on board an airplane without a visa not only continues to this day, but we've now expanded the number of visa waiver countries to 36. Flies in the face of reason, flies in the face of the so-called war on terror. Never mind that we've lost most of our expectations of privacy and freedom that should have been guaranteed, we thought, to us under the Fourth Amendment. And certainly as a former agent, I understand the need for security measures being taken. But think of how easily we have lost so many of the protections that were supposedly guaranteed under the Fourth Amendment. But meanwhile, in the name of trade and commerce and profit, our country is making some really boneheaded decisions. The Chamber of Commerce came up with this organization, this program called the Discover America Partnership. They seem to have forgotten that Al-Qaeda, Hezbollah, Hamas, and other terrorist groups have already discovered America. And they are partnering with the travel and hospitality industries and manufacturing associations to push for ever more countries to participate in the visa waiver program. So as the federal government has been failing to do its job, what do we find? State governments, at least some of them, the more rationally led states, are trying to combat this. And of course, they've been sued, whether you want to look at Alabama or Arizona. And I had the distinct privilege of working with the law firm retained by Governor Jan Brewer when her state was sued by the Justice Department for daring to enact immigration laws. In fact, Arizona had no choice because they were suffering at least one home invasion or kidnapping per day just in Phoenix, the state capital, and almost all of those crimes of violence were being committed because of the drug trade and human trafficking. So it's remarkable that the federal government goes after Arizona, goes after Alabama, same way. Why? Because they dare to do the job the federal government refuses to do. And I will tell you that one of the things I did, and this is a good lead-in, I think, for my guest who will be joining me shortly, and I see she's patiently waiting on the line, and I'll bring her on momentarily. There's a very nice lady by the name of Cherie Calabro, and she and I work together along with the rest of her neighbors in Indiana. They have a group called iFire, and I'm going to let Cherie tell us about her organization. But it's the Indiana Federation for Immigration Reform and Enforcement. And boy, when I say immigration reform, those two words next to each other give me the heebie-jeebies, because to the administration and too many of our politicians, the idea of immigration reform means an amnesty program, which I am diametrically opposed to. The idea of giving millions of illegal aliens who can't prove who they are official identity documents in whatever name they claim is theirs would create an unparalleled national security nightmare for this country and create other problems as well. But that's not what they're about. They want the laws enforced. And I worked with Cherie and her neighbors, and we actually got a bill passed, SB 590, that implemented immigration laws on the state level to try to counteract the damage being done by the feds refusing to do its job. Very disturbing that the states had to pick up the slack. This is unprecedented. This is unprecedented. Because generally, when you think about immigration, you think about our borders, you think about the federal government. How on earth can a country protect itself against the threats posed by transnational criminals, whether it's the Mexican cartels, MS-13, which has its origins in L.A. and El Salvador, the Russian mob, Asian organized crime, the Jamaican drug posses? You'll notice I'm not limiting this to Latin America. We have thugs who want to get to this country from all over the world. The old LCN, La Cosa Nostra, traditional organized crime that emanated from Italy. They were leading the charge way back when. So this isn't about going after Latinos or any other ethnic, religious, or racial group. If that's what it were, it would be wrong. It would be illegal. It would be immoral. That's not what these laws are about. It's about keeping out criminals who want to harm us, keeping out terrorists who want to hurt us. And I can tell you that there is no way we can accomplish those objectives when our borders exist only on maps and when we have millions, perhaps tens of millions of illegal aliens who have set up shop in virtually every town and city across this nation from coast to coast and border to border. But, you know, we get the government we deserve. Too many Americans have been sitting out the dance. Those of you who are familiar with what I write know that I always end my commentaries, as I like to end this program, but we're nowhere near ready to end the program tonight, let me assure you, by saying that democracy is not a spectator sport. Cherie Calabro and her neighbors are no spectators. And by the way, if you out there are doing something in your community to make your elected representatives accountable, go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Contact me through CAPSWeb, capsweb.org. Let me know what you're doing. Maybe I'll have you come on the program. Because my goal is to get you folks off of your rear ends, to think a little bit more about what's happening in Washington and in the state capitol and in City Hall than what's happening with Dancing with the Stars. There's nothing wrong with being entertained. But before we look to be entertained, we should be looking to do whatever is necessary to protect our nation, protect ourselves and our children and their children, to make certain that America remains that strong, vibrant country that's the role model for the world, to be that shining example of what a true democratic republic can be. We are losing sight of just how special the United States is, just how important our country has been, not only for our own citizens, but for citizens throughout the world. America has been a force for good. Doesn't mean we've always made the right decisions. Nobody makes the right decisions all the time. There are days I look back at things I've done and I scratch my head and say, gee whiz, what was I thinking that day? But I will tell you something. I will put America's scorecard up there, and I defy any country to tell me that they've done a better job than this country has. So we the people have really got to have to get our act together. We've got to understand just how critically important our actions are and why we must do what's necessary. And it starts with becoming educated. It starts with having conversations and debates. You know, the First Amendment isn't just about freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of the press, certainly very important freedoms. But it's also, right there in the First Amendment, about the right to seek redress of grievances and to peaceably assemble. And the reason that the Founding Fathers felt it was so important to peaceably assemble was so that we could have the debates, the discourse, the discussions, and perhaps the arguments, but to do it in a civil and respectful fashion. Because it's through that process that a democracy operates. We reach the compromises, we get a consensus, and then we do what seems to be the most reasonable and rational. And I think that most of you will agree, probably all of you will agree, it's hard to find rationality in what comes out of Washington these days. It's hard to find rationality when places like California and Illinois and New York create sanctuaries for illegal aliens. And it's crazy. Last week, I had Don Rosenberg on my program. His son was run down by an alien who had no driver's license because, although his car had been impounded, it was released to him a day later. Our country's leaders, some of them at least, are bending over backwards to ignore the very laws that were enacted to do one of the most fundamental jobs necessary, protect the lives and safety of those who live in this country. So with that in mind, ask yourself, how did we the people allow characters like that to rise to their positions of power where they could do so much damage to our nation and to our citizens? So with all this talk about the wonders and the importance of citizen activism, I think it's a good time to bring my friend and colleague, Sherry, on. Sherry, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Sherry. I'm sorry that I had you on hold for a bit, but it's cathartic to get that off my chest, and I like to set the stage for somebody who's been working as hard as you have.
Well, thank you very much. And first of all, please let me say that it's a pleasure to be with you on this Good Friday and Passover.
Thank you.
And you know that we're often told that illegal immigration is a divisive issue, but I'd like to differ with that. I think it's actually a unifying issue, because here we are on Good Friday and Passover, Jew and Christian, male and female, Democrat and Republican, and this issue has united us as Americans. In fact, in our organization in Indiana, we have both, well, I shouldn't just say both, because we have Democrat and Republican, independents, libertarians, all sorts of people see this as an American issue. In fact, the state director of IFIRE, Greg Serban, is a Democrat, and I'm a Republican. So I think this is something that if we stop listening to the press, you'll really find that there's an awful lot of agreement about.
Oh, absolutely. And Greg is a wonderful guy. It was great having lunch with him when I was out there. And how's he doing, by the way?
He's doing well. He's working a lot of hours, but he's still staying involved.
Good. Good. And I'm sure your husband, Tony, is proud of what you're doing.
Yeah. He's listening. Hi,
well,
Tony.
Tell him I say hello.
Okay.
And you know, the point you're making, though, is so accurate and so apt. You happen to be Christian. I'm Jewish. And, you know, if we look at our origins, we came from the same place. And I really think that the time has come for Americans to start to focus on what makes us most similar, not most different. The politicians love to do this game of divide and conquer, don't they seem to?
Yeah, they sure do, and that's a pity, because we don't have anything against any people. We love immigrants. We also love Americans of
yep.
all different stripes, and we just want to see the best for everyone, and we need to have certain limitations in order to make sure that our own people are taken care of.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's what people really need to understand. No sensible family would give money to charity if their own children were going to bed hungry at night.
Exactly.
And so much nonsense gets spewed, so many accusations. This notion that if you want secure borders, somehow you don't like Latinos, because it's become, for the politicians, an issue about Latinos. The immigration laws, as I was pointing out earlier, has nothing to do with Latinos. I mean, certainly we get more people from Latin America than the other countries on the planet, but that's a function of geography, nothing else, because we do share, after all, a border that stretches more than 2,000 miles that's supposed to separate the United States from Mexico. So obviously there's a lot of pressure on that border. As somebody once described it, it's the one place on the planet where the first world collides with the third world. But to think that this is about people who are Latino, period, is crazy. This is about making certain that we don't bring more people into our country than we can handle, that we don't allow criminals and terrorists to enter our country. You know, if you look at, and for you folks out there who aren't familiar with my writing, jot this down. I don't want to get heavy into law because that's boring, and this is not a graduate class of any sort. But if you look at Title 8 of the United States Code, Section 212, it lists the categories of aliens who we are supposed to prevent from entering the country, and if they get here, they're supposed to be ordered out. And it starts out with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness and are prone to violence, or the sex offenders, the rapists, and the pedophiles, and so forth, convicted felons, human rights violators, war criminals, drug traffickers, human smugglers, money launderers, pimps, prostitutes, spies, terrorists. Who on earth would want folks of that nature residing next to them in that vacant house, and then to see these folks come in and find out, well, they're here illegally because they're involved with money laundering, and they're involved with violent gangs, or they're involved with drug trafficking. Nobody wants that in their community. Nobody wants that in our country. And what's astonishing, and I'm sure you've heard this often enough, you're out there on the front lines, you know, this nonsense, well, if you want the Latino vote, if a politician wants the Latinos to vote for them, they've got to support open borders and the Dream Act, which, by the way, is another a bit of artful propaganda. They say it's about the kids. You know, the age cutoff, I'm sure you know this. You know the age cutoff for the Dream Act, don't you, Cherie?
35?
Yeah. I mean, can you tell me in what society a 35-year-old is a child?
Well, most illegal aliens that come into our country are under the age of 45, so this would give amnesty to most of them.
Isn't that remarkable? So again, what do we have? The Trojan horse. It looks nice enough. They're playing on the sympathies and the compassionate nature of the average American, because I think we are probably the most compassionate people in the world. Whenever there's a catastrophe anywhere in the world, America is the 911 to the world. We're the ones who show up. They know that. So they turn around and say, well, you know what? In their kindness, America's kindness, there's a weakness. So all we have to do is package this as a way to help children. And their hearts will melt. And these dopey people will simply say, sure thing. And, you know, I'll tell you a funny thing happened. I was speaking with a wonderful lady not long ago. We had this conversation, and she's extremely bright. But, you know, we get inundated by so much stuff. And so if she's listening, she'll probably know I'm talking about her. She's not dopey. She's brilliant. But, again, we get overwhelmed. And when I asked her, I said, do you know the age cutoff for the Dream Act? Because she said to me, well, the Dream Act is to help kids. We really have to make some allowances. And I said, okay, if we were dealing with a few thousand exceptional children, I'd agree with you. But I said, do you know what the age cutoff is? And she said, well, probably 18, because they keep saying it's about the kids. I said, it's actually nearly twice that. It's 35. Well, I have to tell you, this woman lives over 1,000 miles from where I am. I think I could hear her voice without my telephone screaming. She said, my God, I had no idea. I said, please go back and look at that bill. Look at what's proposed. It's so infuriating that the people that want to do what they want to do, do it by deceptive language, by playing on the sympathies and the compassions of the American people, who have this reputation around the world of being so compassionate and soft-hearted. It's infuriating and it's upsetting that we could become our own worst enemy by not paying attention to the details, don't you think?
Yes. Did you want me to talk a little bit about
absolutely. So
Indiana?
Now here's my question for you.
Okay.
You and I are both very unhappy with the lack of enforcement by the federal government. And that's how, I guess, iFire started. So why don't you tell us a little bit about iFire, and then tell us the most latest. Goodness gracious, where did I get that from? It's Friday. Tell us about the latest happenings in your neck of the woods. How's that?
Okay. Well, about 8 years ago, both Greg Serban and I were upset about this issue, and we didn't know what to do. And Greg wrote a letter to the editor. I called him up to thank him for speaking out about illegal immigration, and we got together with FAIR. They helped us hold our first couple meetings, and we started educating people about this issue. And people didn't realize how much illegal immigration was costing us and how it was such a danger to our citizenry. So we set up a website. We held meetings for a while. We lobbied for better laws in Indiana and helped to get those laws passed. And much of what we've done has been on faith, because we put information out there and hope that people will take action. Well, with your help, back in 2011, State Senator Mike Delf put forth Senate Bill 590 in Indiana, and that was our version of Arizona's SB 1070. It was a very comprehensive bill. It had a lot of good stuff in it. It prevented us from having sanctuary cities. It required that the police would fully cooperate with the federal law instead of trying to subvert the immigration law. It said that illegals could not qualify for unemployment, that they were not eligible for in-state tuition rates in college, that the government in Indiana must conduct meetings and put all documents in English, no other foreign languages, that E-Verify would be mandatory for state agencies and contractors. So it covered a lot of stuff. Well, as you know, it was a knockdown, drag-out fight. You came and testified, and you swayed a lot of people, especially Democrats, to pass this bill. Well, the bill pretty much got gutted. It had a lot of good stuff cut out of it, including the part about no in-state tuition for illegals. Fortunately, another person in the House, Representative Cook, had a simple bill that just said that illegal aliens could not get in-state tuition rates in Indiana, and that bill passed. Well, this year what happened was that someone seems like they tried to sneak in-state tuition back into
an education bill. Are you telling me that you have a sneaky politician running loose in Indiana? Is that possible? By the way, I have to tell you, it was a privilege to work with you and your neighbors, and with Senator Delf, if he's listening. Mike did a great job.
And you were wonderful and brave because you flew out here during one of the worst ice storms in history.
You got out of JFK
right before they shut the airport down, and Indianapolis was still open, but I believe they shut it down when you were in the air.
You provided me with a first. It was the first time my eyeballs were frozen over. How do you guys put up with those winters? I thought New York was tough. Indiana was amazing. Well, you know, I had to make two attempts to get out there, if you remember. I got as far as Washington one week, and then I had to rush back to New York before they closed down Newark Airport. But then the following week, we finally did make it.
Okay, so what they tried to do with the bill this year was someone changed the language in the bill.
Who's the someone? Do you have a name?
Okay.
Let's name names. Who did this? Who did this dastardly deed?
Well, they managed to do this without leaving a trail. All the information is supposed to be put on the government website. Somehow, the amendment that would have changed the language never ended up on the government website, nor did the roll call vote. But the bill was changed, and I can't figure out how the bill got changed if no amendment was committed to writing, if no amendment was passed. How did the language of the bill change?
Did you address this with Senator Delf?
No, I haven't talked to him about it. I've been trying to work with the legislative assistant for my own state senator, but I've been trying since the end of February to get answers to my questions, and I still have not gotten a response from her. But
you know, this is so disturbing. You know, when you think about the eloquence of our 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, who waxed poetic about a government by the people and for the people, and then you see something like this, what kind of accountability do we have, or what kind of transparency is there in a government that supposedly represents the people of your state?
Well, it's bad enough on the state level. The federal government does it too. And I think
we've
got taxation without representation. They don't seem to even hardly think of the American people. They're always giving money to foreign governments and helping illegal aliens. And they don't seem to think about the impact on Americans. One thing this bill would do, the senator that put forth this amendment just wanted to help a few illegals. Well, apparently there were about 300 illegals that were in our university, our state-sponsored universities last year. And the difference between in-state tuition and the out-of-state rate is $20,000. If you multiply that by 300 students, that's $6 million you're talking about that these legislators want the taxpayers of Indiana to pay for. So illegal aliens can compete with our own students for jobs and for places in school, and the illegal still won't be able to work even if they do graduate from college. So why are we throwing good money after bad?
Well, and you can see where that's going to go. So when they graduate, you're going to have somebody stand up and say, well, we just invested all this money in these kids. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, aren't you?
I know, yes. It's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy. And now you've got the Obama administration saying, well, if you're here illegally, we want to give you a waiver. You know, I have to tell you, if you look at the law, and I'm not going to start spouting law. If you folks want to go to my website, michaelcutler.net, and I urge you to do that, or please go to capsweb.org because they put all my stuff up on their website. But if you look at the law, if you aid or embed, encourage or induce, harbor or shield, you're committing a felony. That's under Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324. Isn't that inducing? Isn't that aiding? Isn't that embedding? Isn't that encouraging? I don't understand how this can be made to happen, how we can have this selective enforcement of immigration laws that at their foundation are designed to protect America and Americans. And you have a president who makes light of it, who makes fun about it. I mean, I still can't forget that image, and I'm sure you can't, when he went to El Paso, which of course is right across from Ciudad Juarez, arguably the most violent city in all of Western Hemisphere. And he joked about the people that were concerned about border security, saying, what next will they want, alligators in a moat?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that remarkable? What do you folks want, alligators in a moat? And meanwhile, what's going on in Mexico is anarchy. 45,000 people believe dead since Felipe Calderon took office. It's absolutely mind-blowing for me to hear this nonsense about there's no spillover violence on the one hand, but now we're being told that hundreds of American cities have become infested by members of the Mexican cartels. 70 or 75% of crime in America, directly or indirectly, involves drugs. Most of the drugs come into our country from outside the United States, very often from Mexico. So to say there's no spillover, it's not we're saying it's not a lot, it's sort of a problem. No, there is no spillover. The cartels setting up shop in cities across the country. You know, I just wrote an article, and again, it's at the CAPS website as well as my own website, about a document vendor who was just sentenced to two life sentences because they were operating in 19 cities across 11 states on the East Coast. Now, they wouldn't even admit that this guy was Mexican, but they identify him as running a Mexican-based document ring. And he actually, according to the court documents and according to the news release issued by both the Department of Justice and by ICE, hook up a guy. Picture this now. They've got him hooked up to batteries, and they are electrocuting him during a conference call to convince the other members of this gang that if you run afoul of us, this is what's going to happen to you. So they've got this guy screaming at the top of his lungs as they are electrocuting him with a car battery, but there's no violence in America coming here from Mexico. I want someone out there to explain that one. How can, as the Secretary of Homeland Security, and by the way, I've given up, in my world, DHS equals the Department of Homeland Surrender. Talk about chutzpah. How on earth can you say there's no spillover violence when time and time and time again we see stories like that? Does this leave you scratching your head, or am I kind of in a unique position here, Cherie?
Oh, no. I hear what you're saying. And
let me ask you a question. How many members of your community belong to iFire these days? Do you have any idea? And how hard was it to get this thing going? What kind of inertia did you have to overcome?
Oh, well, we've got about 500 people on our mailing list, but they're all over the state. And one of the main things we had to overcome is just the fear of being called names.
Isn't that sad?
Yes. I mean, people would agree with us, but they wouldn't say anything publicly because they didn't want to be made fun of or blackballed. And I know plenty of Americans who've lost jobs to illegal aliens who won't say anything about it publicly because, well, they're ashamed for one thing, but they're afraid that if an employer hears them speaking out, that they then will not be able to get another job. fact, we had one guy who came here from California who was an IT worker who had to train his own replacement. And he was on our side of this issue, but he would not speak up publicly on the issue or even write a letter to the editor because of the way employers check Facebook and they Google you and all that. He was afraid that they would somehow see his name associated with this topic and wouldn't hire him.
Isn't it nice to know that we're not only losing the Fourth Amendment, but we're losing the First Amendment?
Mm-hmm. Well, like we were saying the other day, it's one thing not to enforce the laws against illegal aliens, but then to enforce all the laws against the citizens is just adding insult to injury. I was saying, where's my waiver? I mean, I should have
exactly.
a waiver from paying taxes or from having a driver's license or having to provide ID to vote or get a driver's license or buy a house or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, it's like we're second-class citizens here.
Well, it almost feels that way. You know, it's funny. There's a credit card company that likes to tout the expression that membership has its rewards. What rewards do Americans have by being a member of this country? You know, I have to tell you, my dad used to have a wonderful expression. He used to say to me that at the end of the day, I would teach people how they should treat me by making clear to them what I was willing to tolerate. For far too long, folks, we the people have been willing to tolerate far too much. Now, this is not about being disrespectful. This is not about being contentious. This is not about going out and going crazy in the streets. This reminds me of the movie Network, you know, Paddy Chayefsky's wonderful film where, you know, the deal was to go to the window and yell, I'm mad as hell, I won't take it anymore. But really and truly, we need to do that. The time has come as Americans to stand up. And when, you know, I do it all the time. You've seen me do this at hearings in your state. I've done it before Congress. When I hear this nonsense that somehow you're anti-immigrant if you want the laws enforced, understand that those same laws provide a pathway for more than 1.1 million aliens to come to America every year to acquire lawful immigrant status, which means they are immediately on the pathway to United States citizenship. So by enforcing the laws, you're also providing those opportunities for well over a million immigrants to come here. You're also providing opportunities for well over 100 million non-immigrants, temporary visitors. I think the last figure that I saw was that we admit somewhere around 150 million non-immigrants per year who come in as tourists, who come as students, who come as various work visas and so forth. So the law permits that. So when you say, well, if you want to enforce the law and if you want to secure the border, you're anti-immigrant, well, it's under those laws, folks, that immigrants are allowed to immigrate legally, under the law, legally, to the United States. So when we hear this nonsense, and here's something that I have been jumping up and down about and trying to get people to understand also. And I can tell you that I've spoken to quite a few folks who are Hispanic. And they've agreed with me on this point. And the issue is this. This mythology that the only way that a politician can get Hispanics to vote for them is to publicly support the DREAM Act, publicly support amnesty, publicly support this idea of open borders. The people most at risk from transnational gang members are the members of the ethnic immigrant communities, not just the Hispanic community, not just MS-13, not just the Mexican cartel. Go back to what I spoke about a little bit earlier, the Russian mob, Asian organized crime, the Jamaican posses, all of those groups. The most likely people to be harmed by them are American citizens and immigrants living within the immigrant community who are here legally. So why on earth would a United States citizen who understands the peril created by having criminals come into our country from outside the United States, why would that American citizen who happens to be Latino, for example, be thrilled to death to see gang members setting up shop in his community, which not only threatens him and perhaps his wife, but those gangs look to recruit? So if he or she has a child, 12, 13, 14, 16 years old, that child is going to find himself being confronted by gang members who will give them the choice of either you join us or we're going to do a job on you. So it's all so ridiculous to make a presumption that if you're Hispanic, you want all those laws to be ignored, and you want to give out benefits to people who, at the end of the day, are going to compete with the lawful immigrants and U.S. citizens who are already here abiding by our laws. I was speaking to a lady. I had to take care of some business at Brooklyn Borough Hall just this past week, and I was speaking with a couple of women who happened to have been originally from the Caribbean. They are U.S. citizens. And their rage at having gone through the process of naturalizing, one woman told me she's been a citizen for 40 years, and she can't imagine why on earth our government would now want to cheapen citizenship so much that it's virtually worthless. So there's a mythology that no one is challenging. And what I ask you folks to do, please, if someone engages you in that conversation, the time of stepping away and apologizing has to end. I'm not telling you to have a fight with anybody. That's the last thing I want. But really and truly, we really need to stand up and show some spine. Tell people why we hold the beliefs that we have. Explain to them who we are and what this is about. Because I think if people really heard from the average American why these laws are so fundamental and so important, I think we could go a long way to countering the damage being done to the people who are really feeding at a very deep and lucrative trough. You know, I do a lot of things, and one of the things I did was write a very long article for The Social Contract. They're going to be publishing it within the next week or two. I can't wait to hear that it's out. And when it is, I will post a link to it, or you'll be able to buy it, I guess, at newsstands and elsewhere. But I've written a bunch of articles for The Social Contract. And this time we focused on the profiteers of immigration. And my article, unless they've changed it, I don't know, I hope they didn't, because I like the title, was Immigration, the Modern Day Gold Rush. And if you look at how many people are profiting by creating these amnesty programs, by having these huge number of illegal aliens come to the country, or the huge number of so-called temporary foreign workers come to the country, whether it's the banks, the money remitters, the corporations, the landlords, the politicians looking for the campaign contributions, the immigration lawyers, the advocacy groups, all of these folks are just packing in the money. And meanwhile, it's the average American who's trying to keep his head above water that's suffering because of this. So we've done a lousy job as employers because our government officials, at least on paper, work for us. And by allowing these folks to continue to get reelected and reelected and reelected, and then watch them push an agenda that harms national security, that impacts national security, that has a deleterious effect on education and on health care. And you look at that and you say to yourself, how do these folks get reelected?
I know.
If you want the answer, look in the mirror.
Well, they're never going to pass term limits. It's up to us to impose them every time we have an election.
Well, the term limit is Election Day.
Yes.
The term limit is Election Day, and we've got to start to have some spine, and we've got to start to get involved, and we need to start to have a relationship with our elected representatives. You know, my elected representatives know my voice. They may cringe. I don't care. They know who I am. They know what I stand for. And everyone should be doing that. You know, when you go to a waiter, when you go to a restaurant, Cherie, have you ever said to a waiter, just throw some garbage on the plate, I'll eat it?
No.
Did you ever say to a waiter, you know what, I don't know what to eat, so order something for me and whatever it is, that's okay. Have you ever seen anybody do that?
No.
Well, aren't we in effect doing that with our elected representatives when we don't make it clear to them what's expected? Did you ever buy a car from a car dealership and say, listen, I don't care what you put in my driveway, just put something with four wheels in my driveway, that'll be fine. Have you ever done that?
Nope. That's
so
a good
how
analogy.
On earth? Huh?
That's a good analogy.
But isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. Think about it. And I want you to think about something else. I have an exciting project in the works. Maybe next week I'll let you guys in on the secret. Cherie knows about it, but shh, don't say a word. But I was having lunch with some folks that I've been working very closely with, trying to put this new project together, and I'm very excited about it. And
me too.
Well, Well, thank you, Cherie. And you know me with my infamous analogy. They call it Cutlerisms over there. And I compared illegal aliens with a rental car. I don't know if I told you this, but I'll share it with the audience. Now, I want you folks to think about this. Everyone says, well, we have to legalize those who are here. Well, first of all, if you believe that the reason that the people who are here illegally do the work because they're illegal aliens, once you legalize them, they're not going to do the work. I will tell you that back in 1986 when the Reagan administration, and again, here we go, Republican, right, Reagan, passed the amnesty of 86, our phones rang off the hook. And you know why they rang off the hook? Because these newly legalized aliens went to their employers and said, you know what, Joe, I'm going to keep on working for you, but not for $5 an hour. I want prevailing wage, and I want you to pay me on the books, and I want to get time and a half for overtime, or whatever was appropriate, time and a quarter, whatever the deal. And, of course, they got fired. So, item number one, if we legalize the illegals, besides all the other problems, they won't do the work if you think it's cool to exploit people. And believe me, they are being exploited. And let's be blunt about this. Illegal aliens are exploited worse than slaves. But before I say anything about the exploitation of the illegals, I have to also raise another pet peeve that I have. This notion that we keep hearing that the issue of illegal immigration is the modern-day civil rights movement. Wrong, 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 with a bunch of exclamation points after it. The civil rights movement was about addressing a wrong, major wrongs, outrageous wrongs, committed against citizens of the United States whose ancestors were dragged here in the bowels of slave ships against their will. And these black Americans were being treated like trash, even though they had every right to the same protections of law that everybody else had. But those were being ignored. We had segregation. We had a whole bunch of stuff go on that never should have been allowed. That's what the civil rights movement was about, correcting those horrific wrongs. Now we look at illegal aliens who come across the border of their own volition, driven here by their own corrupt governments, I might add, because they're looking for the remittances and they're looking to export the potential of insurrection, because the people who come here generally are young, able-bodied men who would be the first to storm the gates if they had to stay back in their home country and starve to death. We see that in Mexico. We see it in lots of other countries, too. Again, we're not just picking on Mexico. So this nonsense that this is about civil rights is a lot of bunk. Illegal aliens are entitled to due process. If they're accused of a felony, they should have the same protections under the criminal justice system as anybody else for a bunch of reasons, not the least of which being also that you don't want to put someone in the jail for a crime they didn't commit and then ignore the guy that's still out there committing more of those crimes. But the comparison with the used car, and they liked it, by the way, was this. When someone had a slave, and again, I can't even comprehend it, although maybe it's a good time to talk about slavery because Passover, the holiday that I celebrate starting tonight, is about the Jews fleeing from oppression and slavery. So the Jews were the slaves way back when. But in an era of slavery, the guy that bought a slave had an economic interest in that human being. Again, I can't fathom it, but that's how it worked. So if that slave fell ill, he couldn't get his money's worth in terms of the work from that person that he had purchased. Illegal aliens are treated so horrifically, and I can tell you as an agent, I saw this. Aliens who were badly injured, maybe lost a limb, if they were lucky, got dropped off a block or two from an emergency room, and the unscrupulous bum who did this would run for his life so he wouldn't pay the hospital bill. So there was absolutely no sense of investment or connection or whatever. Illegal aliens to the unscrupulous are disposable. And I thought about it as we were eating lunch, and I said, here's the analogy. Because they said, can you come up with an analogy? It was almost a dare. I said, yes. When we buy a car, we tend to take care of it. We change the oil, and we take it to the car wash. And whenever things break, we fix it. When was the last time you saw somebody take a rental car to have the oil changed? If the thing falls apart, you call up the rental company and say, your car just collapsed on the corner of Walk and Don't Walk. Come and get it. I need a new car. And that's the way we treat illegal aliens in the United States. I can tell you that there were nights I came home from work where I raided places where people were being exploited, where it made me so sick to my stomach, I couldn't sleep that night. And if you remember, Cherie, the first time that I went to Indiana, I think the bill was SB 570 2 years earlier. Am I correct on that one? Do you remember?
No. I don't remember the number.
Okay, but you remember I was there once before.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're persistent, aren't we?
Yes, so, we are.
Do you remember that illegal alien who had testified at the hearing running up to me and thanking me for making a public point about how horribly illegal aliens are mistreated in America today?
I know. He told me.
So, you know,
I want them to have a better life, too. I just want them to play by the rules. And
I agree with you. And you know what? There is no reason on earth why a Mexican family looking at their child sleeping in a crib should be thinking, not we want our kid to go to college the way the average American family might. They're thinking we want our kid to go to America. Wouldn't it be nice when you consider the resources available in Mexico? It's a wealthy country in terms of natural resources. Carlos Slim, the wealthiest man on the planet, lives in Mexico and is a citizen of Mexico. And Mexican workers are hardworking, industrious people. So wouldn't it be nice if Mexican citizens living in their own country had the opportunity for success without having to run the border, risk their lives, or deal with unscrupulous bums who treat them like trash once they come here?
Indeed it would.
That's the goal, folks. And if that makes us mean-spirited, I mean, I don't even know what to begin to say. Because I have seen this up close and in person for the 30 years that I worked for the old INS. Now, there was no great joy for me to arrest an illegal alien who was working illegally in the United States, unless we subsequently found out, and sometimes we did, that the guy might have been a fugitive. I arrested one guy working in a glass factory, and it turned out that he had escaped from a federal penitentiary. He had been deported because he was found guilty of manslaughter, and I'm sure it was actually a murder, and they allowed him to plead to a lesser crime, came back into the country illegally, was in jail, and he escaped. So, you know, and this goes back to the safety of who's working with you in the workplace when you have illegal aliens who conceal their identities by using false identities. But when we arrested someone and we were convinced that this was just somebody who was in a tough spot, certainly we had to arrest them and we had to see to it to try to get them to go back to their home country through the process of deportation. But there was no elation. I was much happier when I went after the drug dealers because after about 8 or 9 years of raiding factories and that sort of thing, I was assigned to DEA intelligence, and then I became a senior agent with the drug task force. So everybody I arrested from that point on were drug dealers or people involved with terrorism. But the point is we can't bring the world here just the way you can't have an overcrowded lifeboat continue to bring more survivors of a shipwreck on board without capsizing the lifeboat and taking everybody down. America is in
They need to bloom where they're planted, and that's one thing where I think the church is making a mistake. Instead of doing mission trips and helping them to do better and to start businesses where they are, they seem to be aiding and abetting them coming to the United States. The churches need to get back to the way they used to do things.
You know, it's hard for me to speak about someone else's religion, but doesn't it disturb you that the houses of worship, religious organizations enjoy tax-free status, and then they get in the middle of a political deal? I mean, shouldn't that jeopardize the tax-free status? Shouldn't that be lifted from them?
Well, I really think that's a subject that needs to be revisited. Not only that, but a lot of the race-based groups.
Yeah. You know,
501c3 status also, and they profit off it and try to keep these race issues going because that's how they make their money. Mike, before we go, you talked about wanting the people to get off their butts and do something. I would just like to thank everyone that helped us to stop the Indiana Dream Act from being snuck through. We had less than 24 hours notice, and I emailed about 50 of our best IFIRE members and got them emailing their senators the night before they were to vote on this bill that would have snuck the in-state tuition through. I posted things on Facebook, and my Facebook friends responded. I don't even know who all helped us. I know they were Tea Party people from Patriot groups, 9/12 organizations, Second Amendment groups, family-oriented groups, some members of national organizations like Numbers USA and Alipac and FAIR, iFire members and everyone work together to pull this off and to notify their networks and to do it with less than 24 hours notice. So I know, you know, the people are out there and they really rallied to us this time, and I just want to thank everyone. I'll never know who you all are, but I thank you from the bottom of my heart for helping to stop this bad bill.
Well, and I thank them as well. You know, we're all in this together. This is America that we're talking about. And we are all Americans. And I've had the privilege, Sheree, of being with you and your neighbors in Indiana. I've been clear across the country, whether it's California, Arizona, Texas, Seattle. Goodness, I'm putting little pins on the map, I think, you know. But at the end of the day, again, we need to focus on what unites us all. And what should be uniting us all are the laws of our country and the American flag, and our desire that America remains strong and that we're able to provide for our children the kind of futures that our parents were able to provide for us in this magnificent country. And I think too many politicians have become too beholden to the campaign contributions. As a federal agent, I was not allowed to accept so much as a cup of coffee when I was on duty. And you have politicians taking money with both hands, and if you don't think that that buys influence, boy, oh boy, I'd love to know what flavor Kool-Aid you're drinking. The time has really come for citizens to become involved. We're lucky when 60% of Americans vote in the elections. We're lucky if a couple of people write a letter or make a phone call to a politician's office. You know, insanity is doing the same thing the same way and expecting a different outcome. If you are listening to the program, I have to make a presumption that you're here because you're trying to find out what's going on and how we can do things differently. It has to start by educating yourself on the issues, to know when you're being lied to. When Napolitano can talk about no spillover violence, that's a lie. When we were told about the virtual fence, I jokingly said when I was on Lou Dobbs Tonight a number of years ago, the virtual fence would do what it was designed to do, stop virtually no one. It's about creating illusions. I don't know if I told you this, Sheree, but, you know, with my sick, twisted humor, and enough years in law enforcement does that for you. I think the ideal candidate for the presidency today would probably be David Copperfield. At least then we get a professional illusionist in the Oval Office. I knew you would like that. But, I mean, isn't that really where we are? You can tell if these folks are lying if their lips are moving. And we've allowed them to get away with it, and there are no repercussions. And just imagine if instead of 70% voting on the year of a presidential election, if 85 or 90% voted. Imagine if the phones rang off the hook. And I saw this happen in Washington when they tried to pass comprehensive reform. So many people called Washington that the switchboard literally melted down. It went offline. And, you know, I call comprehensive immigration reform what it is, the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act, because it would enable people to conceal their names, their countries of citizenship, a whole slew of stuff which would enable them to embed themselves in our country, to use the jargon of the 9/11 Commission, to which, by the way, I provided testimony. This is nutty stuff. The stakes could not be higher. We hear about, oh, the unemployment rate is down to 8.2%. What they're telling you is what they want you to hear. They are cooking the books. Napolitano cooked the books on arrest records. In fact, I was on with Neil Cavuto, and I said, trying to figure out how many illegals are here based on how many people arrested by the Border Patrol is kind of like trying to take attendance by asking people not present to raise their hands. So now, see, we got you laughing again. This is good. We're going in the right direction. But think about it. 8.2%, it does not include people who have been on unemployment or have gone through all their unemployment and are off that. It doesn't include people who are underemployed. It doesn't include some guy who used to work 40 hours a week and could support his family, now working three jobs and still not able to support his family. It's all about cooking the books and creating false impressions so that everyone says, well, I guess everything is getting better. No, it's not getting better. Could you imagine that cruise ship that fell over, that capsized? Imagine if our politicians were running the ship. I would love to know what the announcement would sound like coming from the bridge on that ship if Mr. Obama was at the microphone.
It's only 30% underwater.
It's only 30. There you go. And there's nothing wrong with walking on the walls. They're perfectly fine walls.
Yeah, only 20 people died.
Right. I mean, is this crazy or what?
It's crazy. Well, we need everyone to vote more than ever because there's going to be an awful lot of fraud this year. You know, they want the illegals to vote. And I don't know if you've seen any of the exposés out of Florida. They compared the illegals were asked to do jury duty. And they said, oh, no, I can't do jury duty because I'm here illegally or I'm an immigrant. Yet those same people were found on the voters' rolls and had voted in elections. Whether they were legal or illegal, they were not citizens. They were not allowed to vote. And they found 100 of them, at least in Florida, that had done that. 100 people can be enough to turn an election.
Do you know, we have a special election because one of our elected people here in New York State, my state senator, is now in jail, and away we go. So the voting has gotten down to the wire. Do you know what the vote separation is between the two candidates? Between Frick and Frack, I'm not enamored with either one of them. But guess what the vote separation is right now, and they're battling each other.
What? How much?
One.
What?
One vote.
Wow.
Folks, your votes count. Your actions count. Your words count. Your letters and your phone calls, they all count. Believe me, they do. The biggest flood starts with that first raindrop. I'm not going to try to do Bill Cosby's Noah routine, but think about it. The biggest floods in history start with that first drop of rain. People told me that comprehensive immigration reform was going to pass. And I said, well, I'm going to do what I can to try to get a clear message out there. I was invited to testify before 3 House hearings and 1 Senate hearing on it, and it wasn't me. What stopped it was the phone calls to Washington. Now, if those people had not made the phone calls, the bill would have passed. So if you wonder if you're significant and if you count, yes, and you don't only count for your family and your friends, and I certainly hope you do at home that way, but I want you to know that in the scheme of things, you count. Think back to the history books that you read. Think back to a Tom Paine sitting there with a quill pen writing Common Sense. I'm sure that there were nights that he wondered, why am I doing this? Just like there are nights that I'm banging away on my keyboard writing my commentaries for Caps Web or writing my commentaries for MichaelCutler.net or doing this radio program sitting in my bedroom wondering, who's listening? Does it matter? It matters. When you go to the park and you see those statues that are erected to commemorate the actions taken by a single person at a specific moment in time when those actions were ever so vital, that person counted. Don't ever forget that. Think of who we study in the history books. They were all flesh and blood human beings. They came down with toothaches and stomach aches. They had ingrown toenails and everything else. They were human. They were human. Whether you want to talk about Thomas Jefferson or James Madison or John Quincy Adams, these people were just that. They were people. Dolly Madison was a woman. She really existed. She had all the concerns that everybody else in her community had, and she was driven to a higher calling for the sake of America and the sake of posterity. So I want you all out there to understand you count. You can make the difference. It might be your phone call that pushes things to that point. You know, we don't want to look back at some point in our future and think, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda. That would be one hell of a thing to put on someone's epitaph, wouldn't it? Woulda, coulda, shoulda. He could have made a difference, but somehow he just didn't want to rise to the occasion. If you're listening to the program, I hope you're finding the information we're providing to you helpful. I hope that what you find on those websites, whether it's my website, MichaelCutler.net, or CapsWeb.org, or some other websites, I hope that that's helpful. I hope it's instructional. And by the way, if you like what you're reading, if you think it's helpful, if you think it's worthwhile, tell your friends about it. Tell your neighbors about it. Tell the guy you had the argument with about it. We're Americans. We're supposed to disagree. We're not supposed to always agree with each other. The immigration issue isn't a conservative issue. It's not a liberal issue. It's an American issue. The immigration inspector sitting in that booth, whether it's at the airport or at a land border port, I did that job for the first 4 years of my career. When I helped Arizona, I made the point that my job was the equivalent of sitting there at America's front door with my eye to America's peephole to try to make certain that we didn't let people in who would cause problems for us. We do it as homeowners. Our country is supposed to do it for all of us. It's part of national security. But it's not going to happen if we sit out the dance and allow the special interest groups and the folks with the deep pockets persuade the politicians who have come to understand that the only way they can win re-election is to get all this money sent to them by people who will then have an expectation as to what these politicians will deliver in return for that campaign contribution. We need to put the fear of the electorate back into the politicians. We need to convince the politicians that we're not as stupid as they hope that we are. Sheree, I mean, that's exactly what you and your colleagues are doing in Indiana, and look at the results. And by being vigilant, it's remarkable that in a democracy, supposedly, that underhanded shenanigans are going on to keep the American people from knowing whether or not they're truly being represented. Think about that. They are being deceived by the people that were elected, who took an oath of office to represent them and their best interests. It's insane and duplicitous. I'm sorry.
Senator Lugar is up for re-election this year, and he has a challenger, Richard Murdoch. And four of us ladies went to visit Senator Lugar to ask him to vote against the amnesty. It was that in 2006. It was pre-Tea Party. And the bills then were only about 900 pages long, as was comprehensive immigration reform back then. And they were ready to pass that without having read it. They were still writing a 300-page amendment on the morning that they were to vote on that. And they weren't going to be allowed the time to read it, yet they were supposed to vote on it. And we raised this issue with Senator Lugar, and we were told that's just the way things were, that they would never get anything done if they had to read the bills, and they weren't going to read them. Someone read them, but the senator never read them. Isn't that wonderful?
No, it really is something. It's look, again, what's really happened here is politicians are representing the people making the contributions, not their constituents. We've got to make them accountable, Sheree. I mean, you guys do such an amazing job. That's really the point. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Well, we try.
You're succeeding. That's really the bottom line. You are absolutely, positively succeeding. And it's something that you and your neighbors should all be so proud of. I mean, where would Indiana be today if it weren't for Sheree?
Well, I'm not the only one.
No, but you know what I mean. I'm picking on you for the moment because...
Well, I forgot to mention so many people, but I would just like to thank the people of Indiana. And, in fact, we have members all around the country, too, that follow us. I'd like to thank all of them and encourage them to heed your words and to stay involved and to keep on fighting, because it's often darkest before the dawn, and we
absolutely
may be on the verge of a great victory here.
I think we are, and I think a big part of it is that I think you make a wonderful role model. I have to tell you this. You make a truly wonderful role model. So that's something that, you know, you should be very proud of.
Thank you, Michael. That really means a lot coming from you.
Well, You're a sweetheart to say it. I'm just trying to do my job, and you're doing your job. And at the end of the day, as I like to say, you know, we're all Americans. So, that's really the bottom line, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, I have to tell you, it's been a blast having you on the program. I have to get you on regularly so you can keep us up to speed with all the mischief that you and your friends are creating out there in Indiana. And by the way, you can let them know and let folks in the other fire groups know that if there are opportunities, they want panel discussions, debates, that sort of thing. I've taken my show on the road. It's really important to have those debates. It's really important to have those discussions. Because I really think that if we all sat down and got past the mythology and the name-calling and the propaganda and the false claims, Americans could really come to a much better understanding of just how important the immigration issue is and find a way to do something that hasn't happened in this country in quite some time, to really see the American people involved in the democratic process. Through the miracle of computers, the technology is there. It's easy to keep track of our elected representatives. It's easy for us to communicate with one another. It's easy to be heard clear across the country. But I think it has to start by getting people fired up. So if you're aware of any of those, I can be reached, again, through my website, michaelcutler.net, or through capsweb.org. Next week, I hope to have some interesting news for everybody. We'll see how things go this coming week. It should be an eventful week. But, Cherie, I again want to thank you for being on my program. Tell your husband, Tony, I say hello, and tell Greg Serban and all of your friends and neighbors and Mike Delf out there that it's again, it's always a privilege to work with you.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on, Michael. And I can't wait until you share your good news with everyone.
Well, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it as well. I wish you a very happy Easter.
Thank you, and happy Passover.
Thank you.
Do you call it happy Passover? I don't know.
Yes, we say happy Passover. That works just fine.
Okay.
And by the way, you know, if you look at our religions, the Last Supper was, in fact, the Passover Seder. So, again, we've got to focus on what unites us, folks. We're supposed to be united as Americans, and that's really what my goal is. I don't care about political party affiliation. At the end of the day, let's remember, first and foremost, we are Americans, aren't we?
Yes. God bless you, Michael. We have
a lot more
in common than we have different.
You betcha. Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much for being on with me this evening, Cherie. And let me just say so long to my audience out there. I want to thank all of you for hanging in there with us. We ran a little bit long today. I hope you found the program interesting. Again, I ask you to go to the websites, michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org. Please get involved in your own government, in your home state, in your own cities, but also the federal government. You have two senators who at least allege to represent you. You have a member of Congress. They're lonely. They really do need to hear from you. Because remember, democracy is most certainly not a spectator sport. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. Happy holidays.